already here. The Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. Today we have MnDOT and the Met Council is going to put together or at least give us an, I should say, give us an overview on the stimulus package and the projects and the way that the project list was kind of put together, the parameters by which that was put together. So with that, Commissioner Sorrell, welcome to the committee, and thanks for coming over and bringing your team along.
Thank you, Chairman, members. I'm just going to say a few opening remarks, and then I'm going to turn it over to staff, and we'll get into the details of how we how we're progressing with the economic recovery program. And as you said, the parameters that we've been using to move this forward, and we'll get into the details of those things. I just want to say three comments before I turn it over. And the first comment is that when we knew this was coming several months ago. We anticipated it, and when we knew that we were going to get this large chunk of money coming to the department, we knew we had to be prepared. And what we focused on was making sure we had the organizational structure in place to support it, and also looked at all our processes that we needed to have in place to support such a program. And we immediately began to work with our external partners. We began to work with our partners in the industry, and we also worked with all the other agencies we needed to work with, both at the state and the federal level. So we were very much focused for a month or two on the process, and I know there was an interest in having us move directly to a list of projects and getting a list of projects out there, but we felt it was very, very important to spend some time to develop the appropriate processes that we needed to put in place so that whatever was thrown at us at the federal level, and whatever the parameters might be, we would be prepared to implement them. And I think that's where we're at today, and that's what we hope to share with you, that we're in a very good position in my mind, and I'm very confident that we can deliver this program. The second thing that I want to share with you is the fact that we also recognize that we needed a focal point in the department to administer this program. And we established a program manager very quickly. And we brought in John Chiglow, and many of you know John from our 35W Bridge project. And John was kind of finishing up on the project. And so it was a tremendous opportunity to bring John into this arena and have him serve as our program manager. And John brings with him a wealth of experience on innovative contracting and ways to streamline and look at things differently. You know, he proved that on the 35W Bridge. We've got a great project there. Great bridge, and we're very fortunate that we brought John in to serve as our program manager. And I think that's pretty significant because it provides a focal point in the department. It provides a focal point for all of our external partners, and it provides a focal point for you all to interact with us as a department. If you ever need to know anything, if you ever need information, John is available to do that for you. The last point that I want to share with you is I had an opportunity last week to attend a White House briefing at the White House about economic recovery and listen to the new U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary, Ray LaHood, talk about their vision for the recovery program. And I walked away from that briefing feeling very, very good that we had the complete backing of the USDOT. They're very committed to implement this. And I felt very, very good after I left that meeting. And I also will tell you, all of the state DOTs, most of the state DOTs were there. The CEOs were there. And I heard a lot of good information from the other DOTs. And while there are a few DOTs that are questioning whether they want to receive stimulus money, I would say as a whole, we as a country are ready to deliver this transportation program that's presented to us. And I feel very good about that, and I'm very confident about that. And having said that, should additional money come our way, any money that's redistributed, I'm very, very confident that we in Minnesota are ready and prepared to not only deliver what we have, but we would be very well prepared to deliver any additional money that may come our way. So I feel very good about where we're at. I feel very confident that we're in a very good position, and hopefully what we're going to share with you today, you'll feel that confidence in us as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Henkel, and he'll lead you through the first part of the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Henkel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tim Hinkle. I'm the Director of Modal Planning and Program Management Division for the Department. My presentation today will review the enacted bill, give you a general overview of that, and then my remarks will focus in on some of the specific programs that are in of modal in nature. After that, I'm going to hand the mic over to John Chigalow, who will talk to you about the highway element of the bill. And then finally, Rick Jonas from our state aid office will be responsible for talking about the state aid portion or the local portion of the highway and bridge bill. First, let me start with a little bit of background information on the bill and the enactment of the economic stimulus bill. Of course, the President signed into law the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 on February 17th of this year. The goals of this legislation have been the same since day one, to strengthen the economy now and invest in the country's future. The legislation was enacted to create and save jobs, to help state and local governments with their budget shortfalls, to prevent deep cuts in basic services such as health, education, and law enforcement, cuts to taxes for working families, and invest in long-term health of our economy. Congress and the President, as we understand the bill today, intend to do all of this with unprecedented accountability, oversight, and transparency. So we expect that there will be specific reporting responsibilities as we learn more about the bill. And this is really intended so that the American people know their money is being invested responsibly. To accomplish these goals, and getting into the slide and some of the data, you can see that Congress and the President have provided $48.12 billion of additional funding for transportation across the U.S. The transportation provisions in the stimulus bill consist of funding increases for primarily existing federal programs. Of the $27.5 billion that's specific to the highway and bridge portion of federal formulas, Minnesota's share is expected to be an estimated $500 million. 67% of that highway apportionment will be discretionary, and what I mean by discretionary is state discretionary. MnDOT is making those decisions. 30% is through the Surface Transportation Program, the STP program, and the remaining 3% is via the traditional enhancement formulas of the federal government. Minnesota's approach to date has been to distribute these funds 70% to MnDOT for highway and bridge purpose and 30% to the locals. And this is really based on the historic distribution of funds across the state being similar, 70-30 historically. Walking through the rest of the bill summary, you can see that there is also a section for high-speed rail and intercity passenger rail in the amount of $8 billion. Another line item specific to Amtrak in the amount of $1.3 billion. And it should be noted that as we look at the law, that is divided into capital grants for Amtrak as well as a portion to security. And it's approximately 75-25 in that distribution. Under the traditional transit formula, there's also an increase of $6.9 billion. And as we've looked at the bill, that will equate to approximately $92 million of Minnesota's share. And I'll get into more details in a minute on the breakdown of that share. There's also line items for transit fixed guideways and transit new starts of $750 million each. Then there is a new program. This is not an existing program. The only new program under the transportation portion of this bill, to my knowledge, which is a competitive surface transportation grant providing $1.5 billion to that program. And I'll talk about that one in a little more detail in a minute. And finally, an additional $1.1 billion to airports. Now, getting into the bill, and before I get into the modes, I'll get into this supplemental discretionary grant program, which is a new program. I already mentioned that that's $1.5 billion. And this program, as we understand it, as we interpret the bill, is really geared towards larger projects. While the minimum cost may be waived by law, the bill suggests a $20 million minimum cost for these larger type projects and requires that no state receive more than $300 million maximum. This new program is new, so the money is going to be extended to us more slowly, as you would expect. The law suggests that the projects that compete for these funds shall be of national, metropolitan, or regional significance. The bill gives 90 days for enactment, from enactment for the Secretary to publish criteria for how the selection process will be conducted. All applications for aid must be submitted to the DOT within 180 days, and the Secretary must award all the funding to recipients within 1 year of the enactment. The recipients will have until September 30th of 2011 to obligate these funds. At that point, the funds would disappear. The federal share of these projects is 100%, so at this point our interpretation is that they come with no state matching requirement, 100% state funds. There is a note in the provisions that suggests that the Secretary may use up to $200 million of the $1.5 billion for credit assistance under the TIFIA Innovative Finance Program, and we will be looking into that in more depth to understand just what that means. But to me, that means there's the opportunity then to use some of those funds to leverage dollars that are available by others to build even larger projects that might cost have a higher cost. Yep. Looking at the potential eligible projects, this slide gives you a quick summary of some of those that should be eligible. Certainly highways and bridges, some of the mega projects that we have in this region or in the state, as well as passenger rail capacity improvement projects, projects like a Burlington Northern rail expansion to deal with the needs that might exist in a passenger rail corridor. Freight rail, examples being rail line rehab and intermodal yard improvements, as well as port infrastructure like intermodal terminals and docking facilities and retaining walls in those facilities, as well as transit and bus facilities and fleet replacement. It's important to note that as we've looked at this bill in the categories of funding, one of the areas that struggles the most for funding is the freight area. So as you look at this particular competitive pot, note that this is one of the few areas that provides a source of funding for some of the freight rail needs that exist in this state.
Can we ask questions?
Moving now to the transit capital.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask questions at this point?
I believe that we've had that rule. Yes. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Henkel, nice to see you. I was wondering, with regard to the capacity improvement projects in passenger rail, you mentioned the BNSF. Would that apply to a situation where we have a BNSF or another corridor that's currently only used for freight, but adding passenger rail on that corridor? You know, would that apply in that case?
Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoeff, yes. It's my understanding that those types of improvements would also be viable candidates for this source of funding.
Mr. Chairman, follow-on question.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Where would you have to be in the process? I know, there's the study and then the environmental and the design. Do you know, could you be at an early stage in that process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoeff, as with most of the projects that we're looking at under Economic Recovery Act, deliverability is critical. And so, first and foremost, without having the specific criteria that needs to be issued in this category yet, it's unfair for me to answer it, but if I hedge a bet, we're going to have to be fairly a long ways along in terms of project development and delivery activities to be able to meet the spending requirements in these categories. Now, as we've looked at this, you know, we can see that we're out a few years. And so my guess would be that if you're halfway through and you've got environmental documents and you've got some of that clearance out of the way, you'll be in pretty good shape to be able to compete for this type of funding.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hinkle. And Mr. Hinkle, I have a question. Is CTIB eligible to request grants?
Mr. Chairman, yes. And this will be, you know, we'll have to see what the process will be for this. Right now, we're just simply listing potential areas of interest. We'll have to wait for the guidelines, and I would expect that this region and this state and any partner that's interested in chasing these dollars will be a part of that discussion and potential for funding.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Chairman, sir, would extension of North Star beyond its current limitations be qualified, or has work gone far enough on that to enable that to happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it's my opinion that phase of the North Star corridor is not far enough along
really?
To qualify. But again, that's just a gut reaction without having the criteria. We need to wait to see what this criteria is to make that final call.
Thank you.
Mr. Hinkle, please continue.
I am now on the slide regarding transit capital assistance, and as you can see here, the bill appropriates an extra $6.9 billion for transit capital assistance. Approximately $5.5 billion is dedicated to the urban area formula grants, the 5307 category, and $690 million for other than urbanized formula grants, the 5311 program. Minnesota is expected to receive approximately $73 million in the 5307 category and approximately $19 million of 5311 funds. As we've looked at the estimated division within the 5307 category, we would expect that the Met Council would be the largest recipient of those funds and probably in the category of $67 or $68 million. Of that total 73. I'm sure Chair Bell, who will be presenting later, may correct that based upon some of the analysis that they are making themselves. The project selection criteria is the same as that used for and to select our regular 5311 program, including 10-year capital plans. Are these needs in the plans and meeting vehicle requirements as well as meeting the facility requirements that go hand in hand with this funding? The projects identified fall into categories of vehicle replacement then and as well as facility rehab or expansion, as well as any equipment needs that are associated with those facilities. And as you can see in the slide, half must be obligated, half of this obligated funding by within 180 days, and the remainder must be obligated within 1 year of enactment. So this one is fairly tight in terms of the spending requirements. After September 30th of 2010, those funds that have not been obligated will expire. And again, this one looks at federal share of all projects at 100%. In other words, no state matching requirement comes with that 100% federal funding.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Mott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask a question. Under the facilities listing, the bus garage, the transfer station, shelters, and fare boxes. What implementing or the physical fare boxes, or could you explain that a little bit?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hinkle.
Senator Moa, the answer is actual physical fare boxes as an example, and the actual transfer stations and actual park and rides, et cetera.
Okay, thanks.
Physical, yep.
Mr. Hinkle.
Let's see. I'm now moving to the high-speed rail discussion and the intercity passenger rail. You can see here that the bill appropriates an extra $8 billion, a significant increase in funding to the high-speed and intercity passenger rail category. It is being put in place to fund three programs. Those programs were established last year under Amtrak's reauthorization bill, one for the high-speed rail corridor program, one for the intercity passenger rail capital projects, as well as one for congestion reduction grants. Again, because of the newness of these programs, the deadlines make use of the money and the ability for us to make use of the money is a little bit further off. Some work has to be done by the FRA to establish guidelines for the use of those funds. So the guidelines and our interpretation of the law tell us that by April 18th, the Secretary must submit to Congress a strategic plan for how the FRA will handle the program. By June 17th of this year, the FRA, the Federal Rail Administration, must publish interim regulations governing the program, and those interim regulations must contain separate application procedures for each of the three grant program areas. So we expect that there will be specific procedures for each. What's interesting as well in this particular element of the bill is that the stimulus bill waives the requirement that all projects be in the state rail plan. And so there is a waiver that does not require that any of these potential projects or corridors be in a state rail plan to be eligible for these funds. The bill further gives no deadline to FRA to make project awards, but it does require that the $8 billion be obligated and used before September 30th of 2012. And again, the federal share for this program is 100%. Finally, the airport category. And the airport category is also unique in that in this state, airports are municipally owned. The priorities are developed locally and prioritized statewide, and this will be the case for any of the grants that are provided to this state as well and to the airports on a local basis. The FAA, with their input and the input of the department, will prioritize any needs to spend down the funds that are made available. There are 96 of the total 136 airports in this state that are eligible, are federal aid eligible to receive these funds. As we've looked at the traditional programs for FAA, you can see here that we're guessing again because we don't have these guidelines, but the possible project selection criteria that FAA will use will be specific to project deliverability, the improvement of safety and security, as well as preserving infrastructure and enhancing the capacity of those existing airports. The bill appropriates an extra $1.1 billion for grants through the FAA at an explicit 100% federal share. Minnesota is estimated, and this is purely an estimate at this point in time, to receive approximately $15 to $20 million of these funds for projects that will, as you can see, rehab pavements, expand runways or taxiways, as well as rehab or build newer facilities. Again, there are some stipulations for use. Half must be awarded within 120 days, and the remainder must be obligated within a year of enactment. And recipients have until September 30th of 2010 to obligate these funds or they will expire. The department has been working diligently not only in the highway and bridge area, but in the modal area to work to identify needs and potential projects. John Chigolo will cover in more depth the highway infrastructure, so I'm going to skip that. But I do want to walk very quickly through the needs that have been identified, as well as give you a reference point for the lists, the illustrative lists that have been developed. The state's transportation infrastructure represents a mixed private and public responsibility across the modes of highway, rail, water, and air. On the freight side, MnDOT administers freight-specific infrastructure programs focused on project delivery in three areas: the highway rail grade crossing safety, the rail line rehab and preservation, as well as port development. In addition, MnDOT conducts multimodal freight planning to identify system-wide needs, including capital investment needs. These programs and planning activities assist MnDOT and its stakeholders in responding to funding opportunities, including federal programs such as the Economic Recovery Program. Due to the limited sources that I noted earlier for some of the freight needs, we have developed what I would call a scalable program of needs that might have the potential to use some of those discretionary funds or the special new funding that is coming forward. So those program areas include lists of projects in the area of highway rail grade crossing improvements. And you can see there we've got a list so far illustrative of about $34 million, which includes improvement projects on freight rail lines programmed for future years in the State Transportation Improvement Program. We also have identified about $20 million of highway rail grade crossing improvement projects across the state, including grade separations and on current and planned passenger rail corridors, including some of the high-speed rail lines like the Midwest Rail Corridor. We've also identified approximately $10 million of the port development capital needs identified in Minnesota's Port Development Program, as well as about $2.5 million in truck-related freight and safety projects, what we call truck enforcement and safety inspection.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
I have a question on the rail infrastructure improvements, because those are privately owned. Is that, how is that handled? Is that a grant, or is there any expectation on, like, usage of the, for, like, Northern Lights or something like that, or just how does that play out?
Mr. Chairman, Hanko. Senator, it's my understanding, first and foremost, that probably the only program that will be able to fund that particular need is the new program, the competitive program for $1.5 billion. If that is, in fact, the program that would be available for that need, we'd work directly with the recipient of that particular funding. They would work through the department, work through the Office of Freight, and work through the Commissioner of Transportation in submitting that particular need to the secretary or whoever might be responsible at that point in time for distribution and decisions. And so the process will use MnDOT and the facilitation through the staff that we have in the department and through the commissioner to finally get to that as a priority.
Mr. Hinkle, some of these numbers, for instance, the 2.5 and the 10, they're rather modest sums. Is there any maximum on an individual project?
Mr. Chairman, no maximum. And the scale of these figures is an important note. Some of these are fairly low simply because as we've looked at the needs and those that meet our general criteria for deliverability, there aren't many needs that necessarily fit into some of these categories, those that are truly deliverable within some of the time frames that are being specified. So we've tried to be realistic, even though this is an illustrative list, with those that are truly deliverable within the guidelines of this package.
And Mr. Hinkle, and I haven't gone to the next page, these are also 100%. These are not requiring a match.
There, Mr. Chairman, all of the categories of funding that are being provided provide 100% federal funds, at least up to. The only exception that we may see long-term is FRA and FTA may, in their final criteria, suggest that you would compete better if there were also matching funds. The bill does not say that. We'll have to wait to see what happens as FRA and FTA put forward their final guidelines.
Okay, thank you.
Looking at the transit and airport infrastructure, MnDOT also administers transit. The Office of Transit is responsible for grant and aid programs, providing operating and capital assistance to fund public transit service outside the Twin Cities metropolitan area, and capital assistance to nonprofit organizations to fund vehicles to transport elderly and persons with disabilities statewide. The Office of Transit also maintains a statewide system plan for bicycle transportation, supports bicycle and pedestrian systems, and promotes non-travel alternatives such as teleworking. MnDOT is responsible for the administration of state and federal transit assistance funds for Greater Minnesota. So we are responsible for those 5311 funds as the total, as the $19 million of the total that we've been talking about here, of the $92 million available in that particular category. And we typically administer the funding provided by FRA to intercity passenger rail projects. So MnDOT's transit needs are focused towards the delivery of projects in three areas: the intercity passenger rail, and here we've got a list so far of approximately $160 million, as well as bike and pedestrians at about $48 million, and then Greater Minnesota Transit needs at approximately $60 million. Public airports, as I said earlier, are owned and operated by cities, counties, townships, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission here in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. MnDOT has the responsibility for licenses and inspects airports. It operates and maintains navigational aids, provides technical assistance, and helps fund construction and maintenance of those airports. So the aeronautics programs that we've looked at so far are focused towards the delivery of those airport facilities, the equipment necessary to operate those airports, or the flights, as well as the infrastructure projects. And you can see the examples, again, that we have on that illustrative list of, and a cost estimate of about $122 million. Again, it's important to note that the FAA is the selecting body in this discretionary process, and we're waiting to see what that and how that process will unfold. So, Mr. Chairman, that is a very quick summary of the overall economic recovery bill, as well as the modal elements. With your permission, I'll hand it over to Mr. Chigalo, and he will continue to talk about the highway and bridge portion of the bill.
Mr. Chair, just a short question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hinkle, you had mentioned that the FAA is the ultimate decision maker. Does a prospective project have to be endorsed by MnDOT in order to be before the FAA?
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mawa, looking at my expert in the back, Gary Workman, the Director of Aeronautics, I wouldn't say that MnDOT is required to endorse. However, MnDOT is a player in that endorsement process, so we will have the opportunity, I think, to provide FAA with input regarding the priorities, and can expect that we will play in that way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle. Mr. Chigalo. Please identify your record, your name for the record, and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is John Chigalo. I work for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I am the program manager for the highway element of the stimulus package. Today, Mr. Chair and Senators, I'll talk to you briefly about the process that we used to establish the initial list that Mr. Hinkle discussed and is posted at our website for you to view. And then I'll talk about some of the specifics of the language of the bill and our next steps and how we're going to approach ultimately delivering this program. Initially, we began with establishing some broader goals, looking at it in a broad perspective as a Minnesota program. It was important for us as a department to make sure that not only was MnDOT going to be successful, that our partners, the cities and counties and others that were going to be participating in this influx of money were successful in delivering their program. So we've been working very diligently with all of our partners to ensure that not only we would be successful and they would be successful, but we wanted an even distribution of project type across the state to ensure that this money was being spent evenly geographically and to try to take advantage of our full capacity of our industry. Not only looking at large projects, but small projects to try to maximize the benefit in our investment into our infrastructure to give as many contractors and individuals an opportunity to get work as part of this program. In looking at our program, obviously transparency is a important factor whenever we're working in the public sector. Communication process, we established our goals and selection criteria early and publicized those so people were aware of how we were going to move forward in establishing our program. We worked with our districts in developing our program, looking at what their priorities were based on our goals and the overall program priorities. The administration of this program and how we were going to expedite the delivery of these projects based on the language in the bill and the delivery time frames that are expected of us to make sure that we benefited and maximize the investment in Minnesota. And then we are currently working on the reporting and of the program and the project progress as part of this stimulus package, which should be rather intensive on a very definitive and defined time frame to ensure that we are very transparent, not only in our communications, but how we're progressing through this program. The development principles that we established are obviously project readiness, making sure that the environmental elements of these projects, the right-of-way availability, not precluding projects that needed right-of-way, but making sure there is enough right-of-way available to ensure that the project could progress without delays associated with the contract execution, among other things. The development of the design could be done in the time frames that are required of us to deliver our portion to make sure we do not lose funding as part of this program. Consistency with our performance-based plans and needs. We want to make sure that this investment is a lasting commitment, not Band-Aid fixes that we would have to reinvest in future years with our own programming dollars. So this investment needed to make sure that it was a sustainable investment into our infrastructure and met our performance goals of maintaining our existing infrastructure, improving the safety of our structure, among other things. Statewide coverage, I talked about the need to create as many jobs as possible across the state, not focusing on a single project in any region or area of the state, but trying to maximize the investment to build or create as many jobs as possible. In a balanced program, trying to make sure we take advantage of the full capacity of the industry, not looking at a narrow approach of only one or two types of work, paving, bridges, landscaping, grading, among other elements that are normally seen in our program. So we're taking a very balanced approach, trying to maximize the capacity of our industry. As far as program delivery, we are basing a lot of what we're doing on lessons learned from past projects. This is not business as usual. We are taking a very aggressive approach to make sure we are successful in delivering this program. We're looking at ways to expedite our own process internally, working very closely with our partners, the federal partners, state partners, and local partners, to see what we can do to expedite their review processes if that's part of a project, to make sure that these projects will be delivered in the time frames that are expected of us. Again, the time frames in this bill are driving a lot of the development of the program. Having initially the time frames were talked at 90 days, they jumped to 180 days. As you know now, it's for the state or MnDOT, it's 120 days. So the time frames are driving the methods and means that we're using to deliver this program. The letting schedule, we are spacing the letting schedules every 14 days. March 13th will be our first letting. We have approximately 12 projects in that letting that equate to a little over $46 million in work. And so every 2 weeks after that, we will have a letting that will contain stimulus projects. We also have our normal program being let at the same time. We'll be monitoring the inflation after each letting. We will evaluate the prices and the bids that are coming in to ensure that the inflation is not negatively impacting our program, and we will adjust our program accordingly to accommodate any inflation by modifying the letting schedule, moving projects around to make sure that we, again, maximize our investment in our state. And then, as I just mentioned, we will be distributing the projects so that we can maximize the ability of our contractors and give them as much opportunity as possible to bid as many projects as possible by distributing the lettings, the projects within the letting by work type.
Senator Olson, have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chiglo, a constituent raised an issue with me, and I couldn't answer it, wondering about the capacity of our construction industry to handle all of this. You know, with the regular things going on and additional, do we have the capacity within our highway contractors to handle all of the projects that may be coming forward,
Mr. Chair,
as you see it?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the way we have developed our program, we're confident that the capacity exists, and we're confident we are not going to exceed or come close to meeting the capacity of our industry. So that the capacity does exist, and we just wanted to make sure that when we set up our program, it wasn't weighted in one way or another to try to challenge the capacity that exists today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chigler, you know, that is a good question. And I guess I'd like to know where we are at with our capacity today, where we would be at without the stimulus package, and where you think, because nationally there's going to be quite a demand from the stimulus package, where do you think we'll top out as we go through this?
Mr. Chair, and Senators, one of the issues that we looked at initially in starting to develop our program was material escalation. And it came, one of the most frequently talked about issues was asphalt. We encountered very drastic escalation in asphalt prices last summer, and we wanted to make sure we avoided artificially causing that escalation through an overabundance of projects associated with that type of work. So, you know, we have worked very closely with the industry to make sure that we are not negatively impacting that capacity. For instance, we have concrete pavers in our state that are working in Missouri to keep their crews busy. And we will be increasing the program for concrete paving to try to keep those workers at home and maximize the capacity within our state for that specific type of industry. When you look at the other areas of our industry, we don't have the bonding program in itself will increase the demand of our structures industry in the bridges area. There is definitely a good capacity that is existing today for the grading area, but we're comfortable that our program is not going to challenge those areas and have a negative impact on our program.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, I guess, follow up on that as well. In terms of letting these bids and putting it out for bids, are we going to expand as far as the number of qualified contractors we're going to look at, or are we going to have kind of the same set for all of these projects as they come down? What do you anticipate as far as the letting process?
Mr. Chiglow.
Mr. Chair, Senator, another issue that we have is because of the economic conditions that we have, we foresee seeing more contractors that do not normally bid our projects in the market.
Okay.
And so that, again, increases the capacity that we have that exists. So we do foresee more contractors coming in that are not normally as part of a highway industry, and we will be doing things to make sure that they understand the conditions or the specifications of these projects by doing pre-bid meetings and holding those types of forums to ensure that they're fully understanding what they're bidding and getting into.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Chiglow, there's going to be a qualification process to make sure they can do these projects.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we do not pre-qualify our contractors. We will work with them to make sure they understand the context of the projects that they are going to be pursuing. But we do not pre-qualify our contractors.
Mr. Chair, finally, just so I understand, I'm sure there's a bonding and all those things that they have to do. So to be qualified to get into the arena to even place the bid, some of those requirements, they must have the prerequisite skills to tackle these things. One of my fears is we're in a rush to get all these things done, that we actually start bringing on contractors that aren't quite capable of doing the project that they say they are, and we end up with a subpar finished product that, you know, either compromises safety or whatever, or the length of the project needs to be redone. I'd hate to see us get into that pickle. So,
Mr. Chiglow.
Mr. Chair, Senator, as you mentioned, the bonding capability or capacity of some of these contractors, if they're not normally in this industry and they're not used to doing a grading project or bridge construction, I think that is going to show up in their cost of doing business, and it's going to make them less competitive with the contractors that are normally doing this type of work. So I think that approach in itself, or that element in itself, will help manage that risk.
Thank you.
Mr. Chicklow, you brought up, you mentioned something in one of your answers about asphalt and the shortage of asphalt. There was a particular shortage of polymerized asphalt last summer, and I'm wondering if, you know, just that as being representative of materials shortages, are we looking at the potential of some more material shortages because of the rush to bid or to accomplish these jobs, especially in, say, re-rod and concrete?
Mr. Chair, the polymerized asphalt is something that we definitely have looked into, and we will be using that in projects where it makes the most sense, and we will be managing our risk for escalation of that type of material by minimizing its use and maximizing its benefit where, again, it makes sense. As far as the capacity of the other areas, cement, for instance, we're very confident there's been some new cement plants established, especially in the Midwest, that will help us with the capacity of that type of material. And with the downturn in the vertical construction, we do not believe there will be an issue with the steel material issue delivery.
Thank you. Please continue.
As part of the program delivery, we'll use a number of methods for delivering these projects. Design bid build, which is our traditional process, will be the majority of the projects that we will deliver. We'll be using design bid build. Design build best value will be used again where it makes sense. Design build low bid will be used on only one project, I believe, at this point. There are a total of four design-build projects, and we will be getting a letter to you identifying those projects in accordance with the legislation in the near future. We will be looking at packaging projects to take advantage of efficiencies in reducing the mobilization if the projects are close geographically. We'll be using package projects to take advantage of administrative efficiencies in administering multiple areas with one team, and we'll be looking at max price contracts to maximize the investment into our program. Disadvantaged business enterprises, goals will be established on each job. We will take a very aggressive approach for projects that historically have been performed by DBEs in establishing goals for those projects. We will be also looking at establishing goals for mentorships with our historical prime contractors. They will be asked to mentor DBEs that will expand the capacity of our DBE and make a more viable group of DBE contractors than what we already have. And we will, again, continue with the interaction with our industry and working with them to help them find opportunities for DBEs to participate. And we'll build off the success of 35W, where our goal was 11% and we achieved a 14% goal. And that, in turn, was because of the interaction with the contractor and helping them identify. And we were also working with the DBEs to help them be successful in participating in that project.
Senator Bonoff has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chicklow, earlier in the session, the governor did a press conference with regard to the initiative of shared services and shared purchasing with the state of Wisconsin. And I wondered if, as you talked about your, you know, you'll package projects, are you talking to Wisconsin or are you doing anything together with our neighboring states as you look at taking on the additional projects?
Mr. Chicklow.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, if one of our projects was a border crossing, we would work with them, and either MnDOT would administer a project or the state would, Wisconsin would administer a project or that neighboring state. There would be a partnership established to allow one or the other to administer that project instead of having multiple project teams. But that is something that has been occurring for many years. But as far as tying projects that are associated with the stimulus, at this point, none of those opportunities have presented themselves.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know MnDOT is working very hard to take a look at its obligations and requirements under the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm wondering if we're keeping those issues in mind as we look at building new facilities, or if we're taking a look at existing facilities that maybe need to be brought into compliance with some of those requirements.
Mr. Chiglow.
Mr. Chair, Senator, as part of our program, whenever we have a project that is adjacent to those an ADA facility, it is our responsibility to upgrade those ADA facilities as part of that job. So we have a number of projects, for instance, 169 through the city of St. Peter, our parking areas and our rest areas will all be brought up to ADA standards as we work through those projects. And those are just examples. There will be other areas. We are also working to identify other opportunities to specifically address ADA, and that is not yet firm, but we are working on developing that approach also.
So,
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. That's great. I just think as we're building new facilities, of course, we want to make sure that we're keeping, you know, those provisions in mind. The opportunity is now, and it certainly would save us from having to go back, because I know that MnDOT is right in the middle of evaluating what it needs to do, to what extent, what is within its existing inventory that maybe we need to go back and fix. So as we're building new, we certainly need to keep those things in mind. But there also might be an opportunity here to go back to some of those existing facilities to make sure that crossings and corners and whatever, I don't even know what all is involved in that, but there's a lot out there, I'm guessing.
Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chiglow, can you remind the committee again how MnDOT goes about establishing the goals with respect to DB enterprises for each of the projects?
Mr. Chiglow.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I am not the best person to define this, but in general, what we do is look at opportunities that have been historically elements of a project that have been had participation from DVEs, and there are multiple things that we do in evaluating our goals and establishing our goals. Our statewide goal for this year is 15% participation, and we will work hard to achieve that. But there are multiple steps that are followed in establishing these goals, and part of that is historical participation.
Senator Mott.
Mr. Chair, so I understand that it maybe was unfair to ask in this setting, particularly when you're going with the overview. So I wonder if you'd be willing to, or maybe, I'm sure you have it. We've had it before, but I just wanted to remind you with respect to these projects. Maybe you will send all the members of the committee, or maybe just to me, unless other members would like it, what that process looked like after this over. Thanks.
Mr. Chiglow.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we will give you that break, that outline, and get you that information.
Thank you.
I'll just talk quickly about the time frames. One of the most important is the 50% of the funds that are allocated to MnDOT. So roughly $170+ million needs to be authorized in 120 days. Any unauthorized funds of that 50% are sent back to Washington, D.C. for redistribution to states that were successful in delivering that first 50%. So our program is set up to make sure that we are successful in delivering that first 50% to maximize our investment in our state. All the remainder of the funds require authorization, I believe it's in 1 year. September 30th, I don't believe is correct. I'm sorry about the mistake. It is February 17th of 2010. Reporting requirements are established for 30, 90, 180, 1 year, 2 years, and 3 years. In order to keep up with this, I anticipate us doing this on a monthly basis. And projects, the reporting requirements are based on projects that are awarded, started, and completed, the jobs that are created and sustained, the funds that are appropriated, allocated, and authorized. So these are the initial reporting criteria. We will be talking with the Federal Highway Administration to get more detail regarding the reporting requirements associated with this program. What does authorization mean? It is really the time that we advertise plans. Once we advertise plans, there will be a three-week period of time that the contractors are able to develop their bids and submit their bids. There will be all of the stimulus projects will have a three-week advertised period, so that the March 13th letting, those first projects will be advertised starting this Friday. And the contractors will have 3 weeks to review the plans and submit their bids with the letting on March 13th. As for design build projects, the authorization time frame is at the time we issue the RFP, and then there is a time lag between the issuance of the RFP and the letting that varies depending on the project. What does shovel ready mean? Shovel ready means different things to different people. There are an enormous amount of needs out there, and I have some letters from some of the committee members here already that I need to respond to. There are a lot of good projects out there, but we really were focused on working around the parameters of the legislation or the bill to make sure that we were successful. And in doing so, the time frames in some cases eliminated some of the projects that some of you have interest in. The important dates to remember, again, is the 17th of February is the date of enactment, and most of the time frames are driven around that time. The June 12th date is the 120-day deadline. Just shy of that, but it's the Friday of that 120-day deadline. Program delivery, we are to deliver this using consultants and our internal forces. We are coordinating closely with Federal Highways. They are responsible, obviously, to authorize all of these projects. We are looking at how we manage risk in our normal program and how we can manage risk more effectively by sharing some of that risk with the contractor if they are the more appropriate person to manage that element. We are working and coordinating with the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Met Council and TAB and Met Council met yesterday. I know there's been some publicity recently about the distribution of funds between East and West. It was very clear yesterday in TAB that they didn't want to make this an East-West competition. They wanted to focus on a regional approach with an understanding of the investment that's being made on the east side of the metro with the bonding portion. The Chapter 152 program has identified a number of large structures in the East Metro that will start with an investment in 2010. And that investment in itself is over $1 billion. We are working across the state with all of the MPOs to amend the STIP so that we can move forward in the letting process.
So on that point, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
And I do want to acknowledge that because I have been contacted about the stimulus package, and I think I reinforce that there is overall balance and that perhaps as these West Metro projects are accelerated, that might help some of our other East Metro projects that are coming down the pipe later. So I want to thank MnDOT and acknowledge, because I do look for, you know, the equity, and I just want to thank you for all your work on that.
Mr. Chiglo, and I have a question also. If and I'm not exactly sure what you mean by the amendment of the STIP here, but how do you score this with the maintenance of effort requirements? How do you interpret maintenance of effort, and is that something that you're going to be able to maintain?
Mr. Chair, that is something that we are working through, and Minnesota is very fortunate in some ways because we have dedicated funding for transportation. And so when we look at this influx of money, this is above and beyond our normal program. And so we will be certifying that we are not supplanting our existing funds with this money to deliver this program. And one of our criteria was we would not allow projects that are in the fiscal year 09 budget to be part of this stimulus. We were looking at advancing jobs or bringing new projects into the program as part of this process. And so we will be certifying that we are not really supplanting funds as part of this process.
Okay, thank you.
And then,
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions, and this may be more for Mr. Henkel, I trust that we have enough projects that are shovel-ready in the roads and bridges area to take full advantage of the stimulus money. I have no doubt that we probably have more than enough projects to take advantage. But I'm wondering, when it comes to the interstate rail money, the high-speed money, as well as the inner city, we haven't done the kind of rail planning to date that we might have wished that we had. Do you feel as though we are going to be able to take full advantage of what might be possible with this stimulus bill, or do you think that, in fact, we will be leaving some money that we could have otherwise have had?
Mr. Chiglo.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry, Mr.
Could try to take a shot at that, Senator Bonoff.
Yeah, thank you.
First and foremost, we don't know what the guidelines will be for the grant process, so we'll have to wait for that. That said, we're working diligently to be in the best position we can be to apply for funds that will be made available to this state. And while we are behind in some circumstances, we believe that the lists that we're putting together and the work that we're doing through the governor's office and through the work that we're doing here in the department with our partners will give us ample set of projects that will be viable candidates for whatever funds comes our way.
Good. Thank you very much. And Mr. Senator Chairman, Bonner. And it sounds like there may be opportunities for waivers as well with regard to some of the aspects of the bill, and so perhaps that will help also.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, that is correct. We'll have to wait to see what that is.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Henkel, thank
Senator
you for
Dahl.
Your leadership on that.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Knowing that, and I don't know who would answer this, but we got this time frame of that we're trying to get these projects done, and we're going to be moving some of these projects up the ladder in the queue, getting ready for possibly a next wave, whether there's money that other states can't use and we get to have it, or are we going to have someone, a point person, to have our cities and like work with to kind of make sure those particular projects that's kind of just outside of the shovel-ready projects, we're getting our ducks in a row there, or is that someone that your office we would contact with, or is it going to be somebody else?
Mr. Chiglo.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we are our program is very robust. The list of projects you see, we're really driven by this first allocation of funds. And we are working with the districts and our partners to identify other projects that would be developed and put on the shelf, in essence, and be available for any grants or any redistribution of funds. So we are fully prepared, and we will be in place to take advantage of any additional funding that becomes available through redistribution and through a competitive process.
And Mr. Chair, so Mr. Chair, as we go forward, then our city should be working with your office then on those things.
Mr. Chiglo.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think for the cities and counties, our state aid office and Rick Jonas would be their point of contact, and I'm working very close with Rick in developing the overall program.
Isn't that last
Senator
again?
Dahl.
Sorry,
Mr. Jonas.
Jonas, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
And to finalize out my presentation here, it's really to talk about finalizing the program based on our funding constraint. The program that is posted on our website has a funding need of over $500 million. Those are MnDOT projects. The projects that since the bill has been enacted, it's become very obvious what our funding level is, and that is $345 million. So we will be looking at our program and adjusting our program to accommodate the actual funding of this legislation. And so that will be worked on over the next few days, and we hope to have our final program in place around the end of next week.
Thank you. It's fair to say that you had pent-up demand.
Mr. Chair, that is accurate.
Thank you.
And with that, I will turn the mic over to Mr. Rick Jonas.
Mr. Jonas, please identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Jonas, and I'm Deputy Director of the State Aid Division of MnDOT, and I'm coordinating the economic recovery program for the counties, cities, local agencies that are going to be participating in this program, and working very much under Mr. Henkel and under Mr. Jiglow to make sure that our program integrates, complements, and is consistent with the trunk highway program in every way. So everything that has been said to you so far today applies to how we are setting up that local program. The one difficulty I may have had that has not been quite as intense for the trunk highway side, though, is that the expectations, you talk about the pent-up need, want, desire of local agencies, especially when we're dealing with over 200 state aid agencies and another 1,000 local agencies that would like to compete for federal funds that are not normally involved in the federal aid process. And the news coverage and everything else, and the gathering of lists and the submittals of information of shovel-ready projects with people that have not ever gone through a federal process before to realize that there is a need to do environmental reviews and proper right-of-way acquisitions and all of that. A lot of work has been spent the last few months, you know, clarifying that these are federal funds as similar exactly as federal funds that we receive every year. Local agencies compete through the ATPs and the MPOs, and they receive somewhere between $100 and $150 million. This year, I think it's $125 million of federal aid funds, and programs are selected. There's never enough money to go around. The ATPs are always holding their public hearings and announcing their project selections, but I always think the big news is those projects that didn't make the cutoff, because they're all good candidates or they wouldn't be submitted. We now have the opportunity to have a bonus year, but that doesn't mean every eligible agency is going to get a project, and it doesn't mean that all needs can be met. In fact, kind of where we ended up, without going through the long story of this, is like the development principles that were discussed on the trunk highway side, if we can accelerate the federal aid program, the STIP program for the next 3 years, and move it forward, respecting the MPO, ATAP processes, and give them a shot in the arm, have their projects move forward, and then let them go through their solicitation processes to backfill local projects back in with new projects, giving them the proper time to do the work right, and decide that these new projects for new federal funding are, in fact, regionally significant to their area. The other list that we took a look at, and I think you'd understand, we had about 118 bridges at the beginning of the year here on our bridge waiting list, looking for funding wherever they could find it, partially funded, not completely funded. The law, the requirements there, I'm not sure if this part was covered earlier, but it pertains more to the local agencies. You have to be on a major collector or above, or the common words that a lot of the local agencies use is the old federal aid system. The projects that we selected had to be part of that. So we took a look at the bridges, and out of that 120 bridges, there were about 30 that were on the federal aid system. And we worked with those communities to encourage them to participate in this program, and we did select 30 bridges off that bridge waiting list too. So that, again, serves to accelerate anybody that has a bridge anywhere in the state that is going to be coming to need for funding. Anything that we can move forward off that list, it benefits the whole programs. And so in that way, there are no losers. Local road needs are being accelerated by these programs.
Mr. Konis, does that include the roads that are not on the state aid formula? And how about the municipalities under 5,000? Are they eligible also for going after some of these grant funds?
Mr. Chair, those are the exact type of questions that I got quite a bit of in the last several weeks. The state aid system and the federal aid system are not identical. The federal aid system, generally speaking, is a smaller system of roads than the state aid system. Going to our functional classification system for guidance on that right now, it's a major collector, minor arterial, principal arterial. The minor collectors and the local road systems are not eligible. Now, there's nothing particular that I'm aware of that makes a township or a city under 5,000 not eligible in this program, but they have to be an owner of a major collector or above, and that isn't very common. So we did receive a lot of applications from cities under 5,000 or from townships, and these township bridges, many of the bridges that were on the waiting list were owned by townships, but they weren't on the federal aid system. We had to cross them off. Now, if they happen to have, there are a few, then we participated with them. Now, another unique part about our program is the federal aid money that we get has transformed in the last 5 years, and not everybody understands the transformation that we got. We now have a delegated contract process. So the federal aid money comes to MnDOT, and we assign it out, select projects, working with the ATPs and MPOs for projects, and then they do the work, and then they get reimbursed. But they are allowed to be the contracting agency and actually managing federal aid money. That is relatively new in Minnesota. It is somewhat unique in the United States that our local agencies are considered responsible enough to actually touch a federal dollar and spend it and then be audited directly afterwards without having MnDOT manage the money for them. It's really working well for us. But one of the things that we have found in our audit findings is we start getting into the smaller communities that have smaller staffs, maybe not an engineer assigned regularly, problems of understanding the entire program, just like so many applications that weren't qualified indicate that there's an understanding.
Senator Murphy has a question.
Okay.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, I'll wait until he's done the presentation.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly wrap up then on that. It is important that the local agency have people on staff that understand the rules and regulations. And so typically a city under 5,000, if for somehow they do find themselves with an HPP earmark project or some other type of project with federal funds on it and so forth, we do make them find a project sponsor so that they have the ability to administer the funds without getting themselves into a situation where they can't later prove that proper materials were used on the job site, all the inspections were done in accordance with federal requirements. So that's a difficulty we have with the small agencies if they would happen to fall upon a project.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I think that Mr. Jonas and Hinkle and Chigalo have all done a very good job of giving us a good overview here today. And, you know, I was privileged enough to look at some of those projects that you were thinking about letting in next week, and primarily in greater Minnesota. And there were several local bridges that were on the list, and I can tell you from talking with one district, one county engineer in particular, he was very, very happy to have the opportunity to work with you all and make sure that bridge in his jurisdiction was taken care of. So thanks for working with the locals. And I think that this, and speaking of the locals, I think that your statement that Minnesota is one of the few states that have, that locals have the opportunity to administer their own programs with federal money is, that's indicative of the whole state. And I think that that's a good place for us to turn turn the overview on to the next group, and that's Mr. Bell and them. But thanks again, and thanks to the commissioner. He was here. I believe he might have had to step out, but it's always good to have the commissioner here, and thanks again.
Thank you.
So just to make a comment, Mr. Chair, while we're changing.
Senator Salzman.
I have heard from three different agencies now on their stimulus packages and what they're doing. And MnDOT, I just want to commend the staff and also Commissioner Sorrell, because they have done such a wonderful job of really pulling this together at this point and seem very much prepared to go after every dime of these dollars. And I certainly hope that we will continue to look at those projects that are most advanced, because when you think about those competitive grants, I think that the federal government will be looking at those projects that are ready to go. So I hope we continue to do that. So congratulations to MnDOT, and however we can support you, I think that we're all here to do that.
Thank you, Senator Salzman. Senator Day.
You know, I got a cold and I wasn't going to say much, but I have to, because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, we have a federal government that is $11 trillion in the hole. They don't have any money. They're totally broke. And we're sitting around a table talking about how we're going to divide up the money of this entire broke nation that's going to send back. And I realize that we send more in than we get back. I'm going to tell you, somebody's going to have to pay for all this, and it's going to be our kids. Somebody's going to have to pay for all this stuff. And we're talking about projects here and projects there, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They're $11 trillion broke. They don't have any money. They're in the basement just printing it up, and someday somebody's going to call the loan. And I just feel bad about this whole deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Day, in that respect, I can say that some of the stimulus money may not have been allocated in the right manner. It may have been too much, may have been too little, may have went to the wrong spot. But when we're talking about structures that you can actually touch and see, I really feel that the benefit of that hugely outweighs the implications of long-term debt, because we're either going to have to fix our roads and bridges and transit systems today, or we're going to let our kids and grandkids do it tomorrow. I do feel the same way you do, Senator Day, about the federal government issuing debt upon debt upon debt. If anybody's watched the run-up in gold, there's a good reason in that, and it's because the speculators are saying gold is worth a lot more than paper notes. And there will come a day when we got to pay this back. And I think that our body has been particularly sensitive in that area of acquiring long-term debt, hence the 2 or 3 extra cents we put on the trigger mechanism to help pay for our bonds. I think as a state, we have... in the area of transportation have been fairly good fiscal stewards of our tax dollars. And the other thing that I'll say in regards to the federal stimulus bill is that these were dollars that were sent to us above what federal formulas are on our normal way of gaining our money. If we turn them away, somebody else is going to spend them. And I would rather see our constituents taken care of in this regard instead of constituents in Massachusetts or California or Oregon.
And Senator Day, I guess I have to add that I agree with Senator Murphy on this, and even I am troubled also by borrowing more money. But, you know, we've been borrowing for years, and we built up even more debt than this is going to be. What's happened is that we've built a home and we've torched it. And now the only way to build another home is to borrow more money. But the problem that we're seeking to resolve here is to get people to work
some more, to get good jobs out there and to build assets that we can use in our future economy. And what that's going to do, we all hope, all the economists hope, is that this is going to stir the economy so that we can pay off that debt even faster. So, with that,
Mr. Chairman, I'll end Senator by just Day. Saying that, fortunately, being older, I'll be in a gazebo down in Florida having a beer when somebody calls this loan, and I don't know who's going to call it, but someday they are. And I don't, you know, why argue about the stimulus package as an overall course of action, but it's interesting to me how many people think that it's just free money, that people are just sending us money from Kalamazoo, Michigan, or it's coming from wherever. And I don't know. It's just bothersome for me. I hope that there's a state that doesn't take the stimulus package. I don't know. I'm hoping for, I don't know who it might be, but I'm hoping there might be one state. Somewhere along the line, we balance our budget in the state of Minnesota. That is absolutely fantastic. But now we're going to balance our budget because somebody that is totally down and out, that is printing their money in the basement, is actually going to help us balance our budget. I will just tell you that my four children and you guys' four children and gals here, they're going to pay for this someday. There's going to be, this can't keep rolling like this. There's got to be somebody that's going to call the loan. And if, whether it's the Chinese or it's these other people that in the Middle East that have a lot of money. But anyway, we're not going to.
Thank you, Senator.
Worry about it, right?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, just for the purposes of the next testifier, Mr. Bell has a 2:45 appointment that he has to be at. It's in regards to more of this federal stimulus money on wastewater infrastructure, so we should get cracking.
Thank you for that, Senator Murphy.
With that, this is Senator Bell, who is going to cover the...
No.
Senator Bell.
I'm sorry, no. Chairman Bell, who is going to...
You scared a lot of people with that.
Especially Mr. Chair, because he lives in my district. So.
I'm sorry I demoted you. Sorry for the demotion. Chairman Bell from Metropolitan Council to discuss the stimulus package.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief with my remarks and would be happy to entertain any questions either during or after them. I want to talk a little bit about what our intentions are regarding the stimulus dollars and touch also briefly on the status of our transit operating budget, because the two are closely linked together. On your first page and also on the overhead, you will find the two primary sources of stimulus dollars, Mr. Chair. One of them is our transit capital assistance. This is essentially what is known as, and speakers from MnDOT referred to this as the 5307 dollars. These are block grant dollars that come down to the states. There's going to be $5.5 million in the stimulus package for these block grant dollars. And we anticipate that we will receive in the metropolitan area $58 million of those. I hasten to add, Mr. Chair, these are dollars that are going to come to the metropolitan area. There's going to be an additional bucket of dollars that will be going to greater Minnesota. So I'm just going to be focusing on what will be coming to the seven-county metropolitan area. $58 million from these dollars. The second is our fixed guideway infrastructure dollars, $750 million from that. And just so you're aware, this is formula dollars that are based upon the number of fixed guideways, in other words, transit vehicles operating on shoulder lanes that exist throughout the United States. The federal government gives you dollars based upon the number of miles that you have of these transit ways in your particular state. They are going to apply that formula, and in the seven-county metropolitan area, we anticipate we will receive $7 million from those, the total being approximately $65 million. In addition, there is $750 million in discretionary grants for eligible new starts and small starts projects that are already in construction or final design. Unfortunately, Central Corridor will not be eligible for that. we may attempt to secure some of these dollars for North Star. Essentially, what this the benefit we will get is having fewer dollars that we have to spend, for lack of a better term, in carrying costs. In other words, we will get those dollars immediately and not have to pay the cost of financing that project. What this will do, hopefully, Central Corridor will be a partial beneficiary of this, because we anticipate, though haven't gotten confirmation, is this will allow the federal government to fund some of the New Starts projects that are in the queue along with us. And so if they take some of this $750 million and fund some of the projects that are we're competing with in Central Corridor and move those aside, if you will, and as a result, the pool of competition is diminished for Central, we will get a benefit as a result. That is not, I would not say that is for certain, but that is how we hope and anticipate those $750 million will be used. As I have presented to this committee before, Mr. Chair, we have three principles that we are using for the stimulus dollars: the use of operating costs to free up other funds for our transit operations. As this committee is aware, we anticipate now that we will have a $45 million operational deficit for the next biennium. I hasten to add that is based on the November forecast and not the February forecast, which will be released in the early part of March. That deficit, who knows what direction it will go. Most people are anticipating that it will go up. Second principle is capital investments that improve operating efficiency. And as I have said repeatedly, capital investments with minimal operating tails. I am hesitant to use stimulus dollars to add to our transitway network if, in fact, I haven't secured adequate operating resources for that. Here are some projects that we will use. Bus procurement, metro mobility, bus procurement. I won't go over the entire list in the interest of time. You will find in some of the materials we've passed out, Mr. Chair, more of details on this list of projects. And if you would like, either I or members of the staff could go into more detail on the use of those. As I indicated, yes.
Senator Oldstein.
on the bus procurement, I remember a lot of discussion last year about, you know, like the bids were writ so that a Minnesota company wasn't eligible to be almost in the running for that. Are they going to be in the running for these buses, would you anticipate?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olstein, yes, they will be in the running. I would characterize what happened last year with New Flyer. They were certainly in the running. We just did not feel that those buses gave us the same value as the Gillick buses that we purchased. We still continue to purchase buses that are made here in the state of Minnesota and have some current contracts to purchase buses from facilities here in Minnesota, and they will be fully eligible for those. That one particular purchase, we felt that a vendor outside of the state really provided us greater value for our very limited dollars. But we still, I consider, have a good working relationship with local bus manufacturers, and clearly they will be eligible for this. As I mentioned,
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we're looking at bus acquisition, as long as we're on the subject, has some thought or consideration, or has there been any conversation been had about? Because it looks like Greater Minnesota Transit agencies are also going to be looking at acquiring buses, about maybe all getting together and buying a bunch of buses at the same time so that we can maybe get a bulk discount. We can align some of those efforts, get more buses out of the deal, make our money go a little farther.
Mr. Chair, Chairman Senator Dibble, we do some of that at present. That is something that I can explore in more depth to make sure it is as tight as possible. As you are very much aware, we do that with the suburban transit providers and have a, I would consider, a close working relationship in the acquisition of buses and the like. And I can explore that in greater depth to make sure I take the sense of your question to make sure that that's, we're wringing every bit of value out of the dollar possible. I think that's a very fair question, and I will put that on a list to make sure that we are, in fact, maximizing that.
Mr. Chair, be a great chance to work with our friends over at MnDOT.
Yes. Chairman Bell.
Mr. Chair, as I indicated, the use of stimulus dollars is closely tied to our transit operating budget, and I have in the materials I have passed out to you and on the overhead slide a brief, and I mean brief, overview of that. This really should say the November forecast. As you see, for state fiscal year 09, we were $11.7 million. We had a deficit we had to make up. 11.1 of that was as a result of the MVEST shortfall, which is a continual a problem. And 600,000 was from our general fund unallotment. We have taken care of that concern primarily through the use of our transit reserves. One thing, Mr. Chair, is that we have budgeted fairly conservatively in our transit operations and use primarily our reserves to deal with that. In state fiscal year 10 and 11, we're looking at a $60 million deficit. However, Mr. Chair, as a result of fuel savings, fuel has dropped. We were able to recalibrate that for a savings of $11.5 million. Inflation is also abated, at least for a short period of time. Senator Murphy made, I think, an astute observation of the price of gold, which I think reflects concerns that maybe inflation is in the future. Who knows? Others predict that deflation is in our future. But the savings we anticipate there equal $3.5 million. As a result, the net of that is a projected deficit based on the November forecast of $45 million. We also have some other possibilities. Sum total, Mr. Chair, we are looking at two strategies for dealing with our operational deficit. One of them is internal levers that we can pull, and we may need to come to the legislature for. Alternative use of some of our levies, our livable communities program, we have about $8 million of grants there. However, it is undersubscribed at this time. There is virtually no development that is going on, as we're all painfully aware. And as a result, this program is undersubscribed, and we have actually are holding about $3 million of dollars that have been turned back to us. We have a TIBRA program, Mr. Chair. This is a tax-based revitalization to clean up polluted lands, about $5 million in there. We have what's known as a RALF fund, a right-of-way acquisition that we do for local municipalities that are going to be building a road, and we purchase the land at today's values, even though the land will not be used for 3 years, 5 years, or 7 years. We levy for that. And we may redeploy some of these levies on an interim basis, and I want to stress that to this committee, because I'm a strong supporter of the Livable Communities Program. I'm a strong supporter of TIBRA. I'm a really strong supporter of the RALF program, and I think that it to use these funds for other purposes for a short period of time makes sense. But if we come for legislative authorization, my request to the legislature would be that they automatically blink back on after a 2 or 3 or 4 year period. That would be a strong consideration. I don't want to have those dollars held in account if we have a transit deficit on the one hand. On the other hand, I support these programs, and so do the municipalities in the seven county area. Development's going to pick back up at some point, and I would like it to blink back on. There are a number of other preventative maintenance we will look at that prioritizing capital projects, we may do that. We may use additional reserves. There are a number of strategies, not filling open positions and the like. These are internal, principally internal levers that we will be able to use, up to and including service reductions and fare increases. These are on the bottom of our list intentionally. As all of you are aware, we just did a fare increase in October of calendar year 08. That's yielding about $7 million. That's factored into our budget. We have given ourselves authority to do another quarter increase, but I don't want to unless I really have to. We're at a high with transit ridership, and if we need to do that, I certainly will. And I clearly don't want to do service reductions, but we may have to do that as well. In closing, Mr. Chair, it is quite possible that we will be using, particularly with the $5307, we will use those dollars to primarily purchase buses. And those dollars that we have now assigned for bus purchases, we would move over to our operating budget and then use the stimulus dollars for those capital expenditures. So that's also is likely to be a part of the mix. So we will use two things, some of the administrative changes that I talked about, livable communities and the RAL Fund and the TIBRA program, on the one hand, and on the other hand, Mr. Chair, we will take some of the stimulus dollars and use it for capital, primarily bus purchases, and then take the money we had planned to use for bus purchases and move that over to cover the operating deficit. It will be a combination of those two strategies. And we haven't figured out the exact mix until we get the February forecast. Mr. Chair, I'd be open to entertaining any questions the committee may have.
I have one question on the alternative uses where you talked about the Livable Communities Fund and the RALF Fund and the TIBRA Fund. And you mentioned there's balances in there that you would remove, and then you wanted, with the permission to do that, you would want them to blink back on. Are you speaking of sweeping those accounts?
Well,
not replenishing them, just restoring the levy. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, two things. One is that we have a balance right now of $3.2 million in our livable communities account. That just has not been subscribed to. We have about $8 million that we use. We levy for that. We levy totally about $70 million in the metropolitan area, and we levy for a livable communities program, which is really essentially providing gap financing for transit-oriented development and the like. Excelsior and Grand probably is a good example. Heart of the Cities in Burnsville is another one. We may use some of those funds, but we also levy, as I mentioned, $7.9 million a year. We might ask for legislative authority, instead of levying $7.9 million for livable communities, maybe we would do $4 million for livable communities and maybe take the other four and use that for a transit operating deficit. And we would ask for authority to do that for, I'm just picking a number here, Mr. Chair, perhaps for 4 years. And then we would probably want discretion to do that for a four-year period of time and then have it automatically blink back on. In other words, the full levy to be used for livable communities after that four-year period of time. The theory being also is that when development starts happening, our MVEST receipts will start going up. I suspect that's true. When people start building new houses, people will also start buying cars because our economy would be on the mend. And so hopefully they would be able to happen simultaneously.
Senator Murphy.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Chairman Bell, I don't think you're going to find a whole lot of disagreement on some sort of short-term fix to the budget. In regards to the big picture of, and you did touch on a little bit about the operating shortfall and how you foresee things happening in the future, which could be 2 years from now, could be 4 years from now. Could the same be said true if we just took that, the sales tax initiative that was passed last year and maybe click that up an eighth of a cent or a 16th or something like that and put a sunset on it. You know, that would draw in, and between, you know, if we mix the two, what we were just talking about, and then that proposal, I think you would have more than enough money to survive a, you know, these shortfalls.
Yes. Chairman Mr. Bell. Chair, Senator Murphy, I think you are factually correct on that. As you know, there's five counties that participate in that now. It would bring in around $85 million or so. Right now, Transit Capital is better situated than Transit Operating. In other words, there's a firmer footing to build new lines and the like than there is to operating them because MVEST is such a volatile source of funding. I would be remiss, however, Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, if I didn't add, and I have not had a conversation with the governor about this, but I suspect that he would resist that increase of a quarter, an eighth cent to that sales tax to go for operations. But direct answer to your question, would it fill our operating deficit or go some way to do that? There's no question that it would.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say almost exactly what Senator Murphy said. I think Chairman Bell, you know, appreciate these ideas, and we've had some conversation about them, and you, of course, will receive a tremendous amount of creative response and collaboration on this to solve this operating deficit that we're going to face in the coming biennium, and who knows. Because, of course, I think we all agree the least desirable solution are the service reductions and the fare increases, especially at this time. Had a conversation earlier with Brian Lamb, who manages our Metro Transit operations, and fully 38% of the people who use our transit system in the metro area have no other means of transportation. So that's a tremendous fact in light of people needing, you know, when we think about people needing to get to jobs and education and everything else in their lives. But you also made a very important point earlier in your presentation, which was as we add to our transit, overall transit system, transitways and bus service and express bus service, we take on additional, I mean, the capital side is one question and the operating side is a whole another question. And, of course, within the quarter cent, we provide for some of that operating of the transitways in particular, but we still have to support our overall system, regular route, scheduled bus service, and the state will continue to participate in the operations of those fixed transit ways and those express and bus rapid transits. So we still have a big question, a big challenge in front of us as a legislature and as an agency. The quarter cent just doesn't get us there. MVEST will continue to forevermore be unreliable and volatile, and the general fund contribution is questionable every year because, you know, that kind of responds to the economy and the whims and the vagaries of the legislature. So, you know, half-cent sales tax wasn't a made-up number. We went for a quarter cent for political expediency. We're going to have to come back to that question someday.
Thank you, Senator Dipper. Senator Sieben
first.
Thank you. Senator Sieben, then Senator Olsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't trying to jump ahead of anyone. You were just looking at me, so I was reminding you of my name. But, Mr. Chairman, could you, and maybe you covered this and I missed it, so I apologize if you did, but is the $8 million that the state needs to come up with for the remaining portion of the Central Corridor, could that money possibly come out of stimulus dollars?
Chairman Bell.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, it is $8 million, and I don't believe it can, because you can't use federal dollars to match a federal project.
Makes sense.
Boy. There's a rule that needs to change.
Dumb General. Question of the day, I guess I got
No, it's not at all. It's a very good question. Because actually with the stimulus dollars, some of the, you know, these don't need any matching money, you know, for them to use them, which is a very important provision. But in that sense, you can.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on your list of regional transit projects where it talks about bus preventative maintenance and capital cost of contracting. Towards the bottom of the first paragraph where it says that federal rules limit the amount of 5307 funds that can be drawn into operating budget to cover preventative maintenance or capital cost of contracting, do your contractors get money to cover their oil changes and tires and maintenance? That seems pretty amazing.
It's important to note that we operate some of our own fleet, and then we contract out, like our Metro Mobility fleet is contracted out. And they do actually handle the maintenance of the fleet that they have. So we'll buy the vans, give the vans to a contractor. The contractor maintains the vans for a prescribed period of time when they're being used, for instance, for Metro Mobility. It's just as a point of illustration.
A follow-up then. What is this addressing then? That to cover maintenance, preventive maintenance, or capital cost of contract.
Judd, why don't you?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen.
This is Judd Shetton.
Yep, Judd Shetton, the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. What that means is that there is a limited amount of money. What we're talking about here is taking the stimulus money and putting it into bus procurement and freeing up 5307 money. And 5307 money then has a limit in there of how much you can use for operating. And so what we're saying here is that the federal rules are limiting the amount of that money. We can't take $65 million or $58 million that are coming through those 5307 dollars and put that into operating. What we're saying through that is that we're expressing the fact that there's a limit to how much of those dollars can be used for operating.
In essence, Mr. Chair, the 50...
Chairman Bell.
Mr. Chair, the $58 million from the urbanized area formula grants and the $750 million for fixed guideways have stipulations. And we are going to adhere to those stipulations in a manner that allow us to move that money to almost exclusively capital and then take what we have budgeted for capital and move that into operations. And what Mr. Shetton was talking about are some of the stipulations around the use of the 5307 dollars. All of our dollars that come from the feds come with strings attached, and we have to adhere to those restrictions. And we think that we are going to be able to do it to steer that money more toward capital and then take our current capital allocation and move it to operating. And it'll be that strategy coupled with some of those administrative changes and legislative changes, livable communities, TIBRA, RAL fund, and the like, a combination of those two that will allow us to address the currently projected $45 million deficit.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Bell, you're going to laugh when I bring this up because I do it a lot. But I have to bring up the lease tax for just a moment because, you know, we ended up negotiating where the lease tax didn't go to where some of us had wanted to. You know, I had originally wanted that lease tax to go towards the Metro Transit, and that could have been used for operating. The thing that I like about the lease tax is people who lease their cars have to get new cars because it's a 3-year lease or, you know, at the most a 4-year lease, and so you've got a built-in way that you keep generating new funds. And so I know that it didn't end up going that way, and I don't know if there's any possible way to change that in the future. And I understand it still could be declining like the regular MBEST funds, but I still suspect that over time it will be there.
Mr. Shetton.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, you're correct. I think that those the forecast for those dollars is declining. It was once upon a time when we discussed this, we thought that the leased vehicle money was going to collect somewhere around $45 million a year in fiscal year 09 and then work its way up to almost north of $50 million by 2012. In the transportation bill that passed last year, those monies were put into a pot that dealt with the low-income fuel tax credit. And so the equivalent of that low-income fuel tax credit money was
funded out of the leased vehicle money. And then after that amount is satisfied, it is split between Greater Minnesota Transit and then regional or metropolitan area county roads, with the exception of Ramsey County and Hennepin County. So that's where those monies went. And if you were to go back and look at that, that's the dollars that you would probably have to look at.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the list on that Apple Valley Transit Station. Is this an addition, or is this part of a scaled back part of the original project? Or I just wanted a little clarification on that one.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl,
Chairman Bell.
Committed to, of course, going forward with Apple Valley Transit Station. It's a part of the UPA grant and the real first test of BRT in this region, and it's an additional component to that.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, it's been determined already that they need an additional level, that they think that they'll be at or beyond capacity already?
Apparently
Chairman
so.
Bell.
I believe that that's the case.
It's anticipated in a few years.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Senator Sieben.
Senator Murphy, did you want to go?
No.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Bell, you know, we just talked with MnDOT a little bit about how they tried to find geographic balance between different regions of the metropolitan area, and I'm wondering if you could comment on how you and your agency tried to find that geographic balance in this list of projects that you gave to us.
Chairman Bell.
Or if that was a priority.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I have spoken at Senator Saltzman on this point of geographic balance. She's reminded me, I think appropriately, about the need to have geographic balance. It's important to note, this list of projects really comes into play, from my vantage point, after we take care of our operating deficit. I anticipate that will take most of the stimulus dollars that we have. And so quite candidly, Mr. Chairman and Senator Sieben, I don't think we're going to get very far into this list of projects because we're going to be buying buses and running our transit operations. And I would go one step further to be very candid with you. I want to do more. That's an important point. Than cover just our operating deficit. Senator Gibble pointed out the bus system is the backbone of our transit system. 38% don't have cars. Many of them are low income. The bus system is the workhorse. It's not sexy and the like. It gets people to and from work, to and from school, to and from doctor's appointments. I would like to honestly increase our bus service using stimulus dollars. And so I would even want to migrate more over than the $45 million so I could just very modestly keep the momentum we have in our core bus service. And so the issue of regional balance would be addressed, the regional balance that we have in our bus service, because I want a very modest growth in that core bus system. Stimulus dollars too.
Mr. Chairman and Chairman Bell, I appreciate your comments and think that if there's any way that we can increase bus service, that I think this is what you were saying, that there is the need to look for a balance even in our core bus service between different areas of the metropolitan region, because you know, the area that I represent is only less than 10 miles from here, but we have one commuter bus route that runs between Cottage Grove and St. Paul and Minneapolis. So it's an underserved area, even though it is, we have many, many thousands of people who are commuting into the Twin Cities, but there is not a adequate bus route system to serve my population or my constituents who are still paying into the pot like everybody else throughout the rest of the area.
Chairman
Bell.
I very much hear that concern and like to think, I guess I would leave it to others to make a determination of that. We've got to have a regional system that serves all parts of the region. You just have to do that.
very sensitive to that point.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and committee members, I see that the time's drawing near here, and Chairman Bell needs to go. I just want to say thanks, Chairman Bell, for coming over, and we look forward to working with you and Mr. Shetna and Ms. McCarthy, and hopefully we can get this operating budget straightened out, because good things are coming for Minnesota in regards to transit, not just in the metropolitan area, but all across Minnesota. And, in tough times, I think the mark of a strong state is what they do in those tough times. And one thing that we can't do is leave those 38% of people who choose not to drive, who most of the time, as you said, are of low income levels. We can't leave them standing on the sidewalk. We need to make sure that we those who need our help get it, and we look forward to continuing this discussion.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Probably one remaining question that we can talk about at another time is the same issue we talked about with the MnDOT, and that is how you're interpreting your maintenance of effort, and if you're looking at moving any of your dollars around that you've already planned on spending it on capital. I think we could probably, unless you have a quick answer on that. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Jim.